Good morning. Today is Friday, September the 2nd. Joining us this morning from high atop City Hall. Well, you're not outside. Second floor of City Hall, Miles Slattery. Good morning.
Morning, Brad. How are you?
Well, I am enjoying a fog bank like I probably shouldn't have the right to. 112 in L.A. yesterday. Over 100 in the Bay Area tomorrow. It's like...
My buddy's in Palm Desert right now, and he sent me a screenshot of 118.
Yeah, and you reciprocated with one that showed 59?
Well, it was funny. He was up here celebrating a festivity with me, and he left town, and it was 55, and he showed up in La Quinta, and it was 118.
So why didn't he buy a return ticket?
He'd like to, but he's got to work.
Oh, that thing. Well, not everybody has to work that you know, right?
Some harder than others.
Yeah, all right. You didn't take that to leverage into any elected individuals that you might be familiar with. Fair enough.
No, I was kind of talking about you, Brian.
Oh, there you go. Okay, slow on the uptake. Only half points on that one. Are you ready for our Why Do We Say That?
Yes, I am.
Lion's share. Why do we say someone has the lion's share?
I would say because the lion's considered the king of the jungle, and the king has all of the shares of, you know, whatever they're overseeing.
Don't think too hard on this one. You almost had it right there, and then you talked yourself out of it. You know, and when was the last time someone accused you of overthinking?
Touché.
Yes, okay. When a bonus plan or vacation schedule is announced, it may not be equitable. Sometimes two or three people get the lion's share of the package. In one of Aesop's fables, a lion, a goat, a sheep, and a heifer go hunting together. When a splendid deer is killed, the lion divides the venison into four equal portions. Then he seizes three for himself and suggests that his comrades may divide the fourth, if they dare. Even when someone other than the boss of all the animals does the dividing, the one who gets the biggest portion automatically gets the lion's share.
A little complicated, but yes.
Yeah, what? You didn't read Aesop's Fables to the kids?
No, I did not.
Oh.
I was more of a Dr. Seuss guy, and I'm ashamed to admit, I believe the first book I ever read cover to cover in my whole life was a Dr. Seuss book.
Hop on Pop?
No, it was, come on, I can't think of it right now. But I had it memorized by the time they were three. So.
Green Eggs and Ham, I'm sure that was it, yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, jeez. Hey, let's get an update on a number of different topics. You know, Labor Day, there's going to be stuff going on, but it's kind of an opportunity to catch up for the end of summer. The traffic that you tried to do, the new routing around Washington and Sequoia Zoo, was there a determination on that little experiment?
No, so it's just a demo. We did similar demos on 6th and 7th Street. So the feedback that we got for 6th and 7th was pretty positive. We have the survey results from the work done on W and Dolbear, and that's going to be going to council likely the 20th of September. It may go the first meeting in October, but we'll present that to council and get some feedback and decide how to move from there. I think there's a lot of concerns over it because of traffic congestion and those things, but you know the intent of it is for safety and for having other modes of transportation to go around. As you know, that's very much a recreation spot for the community members. It's a mile around that, and we've had people complain about speeding cars and issues of the like.
Hey, you want complaints about speeding cars? I can give you. I'll sit outside the house and do a traffic count for you.
Hey, I drive on Boone, and every time I drive on Boone, I'm only going about 15 to 20 miles an hour. I act like I'm in front of Arcata when I drive in front of your house.
No, it's the people that are passing you that bother me. Oh, fair enough. You said that you had a candidate for him in the the time we were talking a little bit earlier this week. What kind of takeaways did you get from that?
Well, I mean, I think there was a lot of questions and a lot of complaints. There were some community members that were there that didn't necessarily look for information, but more so was looking for an opportunity to discuss issues that they see the city has. So it provided the opportunity to explain certain things to them. And then, of course, the candidates that were there were able to get informed on all of the department heads' responsibilities and some of the topics that are hot-button topics right now for their departments in the city. So we had each of the department heads go up there, talk about their roles and responsibilities, and then talk about, you know, different topics like W. Dobeer, stuff like that.
As an example. I would think, you know, as much as anything, Miles, for a way that the city presents that, it gives a chance for the potentials to also get a barometer of the emotional connection. You know, it's, there may only be 10 people that are excited about whatever the item is, but boy, are they really excited about it, where you might have others that, you know, 200 and they go, eh, you know, whatever decision. Yeah. I just kind of wanted to be here to see which way it fell. I would think that
on what you just said, it feels like you were actually in the room.
You know, I've made it a practice not to be, just because, you know, I might just take too much of the glory and too much of the attention away from everybody.
Yeah. But it definitely gave those potential candidates a taste of what it's like when we have public comment, because this was a little bit more elaborate form of public comment where people were able to express their grievances and then, you know, staff actually responded to those grievances. So,
I think that's good for them to see that from behind the dais rather than out in the crowd, just to get that sense that, you know, they're the target now, or potential the target, rather than just being one of many voices. And they really don't, there's no chance to take it personal when you're up there. You know, there's that, need to kind of build up the calluses a little bit, honestly.
It's kind of like, keep going, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was saying it was kind of like being city manager, that's all.
Yes.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery, City of Eureka City Manager. Miles, we've talked a little bit over the last months about 2030 Park, that it's going to be getting a face. Well, I don't know if you can call it a facelift or maybe just a new face entirely. Major project, something that you're pretty excited about. Is that going through the proposal stage and getting all that? Does it have the funding? What is the status of that particular situation?
So we have finalized the design. It's 100% design. We were going to put it out, you know, early this summer, but the problem is we didn't want to get into the wet season. So at the beginning of springish, probably next year, that's going to be going out to bid. And we're hoping one construction season, but likely two. And it'll be 100% complete. It may just be one. It depends on kind of the supply schedule and being able to get equipment here on time, you know, especially the playground equipment.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking. Why, you know, if they're if it's somebody who has the abilities, and certainly the city has got some storage space, why not turn it out now and let the get the bidding all taken care of and squared up, and then if the contractors can purchase some of the materials because at a lower price, why not do something like that just so that they're able to really hit the deck running, so to speak, in springtime?
So we are doing that somewhat. What we're doing is we're going to be ordering the major playground equipment, which we see being the biggest sticking point. So we'll order that separate from the actual construction bid, and we'll order we're doing a prefab restroom. So all of that stuff will be ordered prior to, and then just the assembling of that and the grading and the other work that needs to be done with the project will be put out to bid in the fall. So the major or two, and they'll be on hand and being as already purchased when we put it in.
Well, something's going on here. I don't know what. I think we didn't.
Talking into his speakerphone?
We didn't lose Miles, but maybe Miles, did you mute your phone? Are you muting your phone? Yeah, it's
you. You were muting. I couldn't even hear you.
Oh well, that's. Where are you driving?
I am right on 101.
Okay, so you didn't hit a dead zone or anything. Just.
No.
All of a sudden,
did I go out?
Yeah, and all of a sudden you started making sense. So if 2030 is sitting there, is there still a chance for any of the paving projects? We see a little bit going on. It's I think it's one of the electric companies, the undergrounding along West Avenue. Is that something that's going to get wrapped up by the end of the year?
Yeah, and we have a major, you know, down at 2nd and X by Carbono and Barry Smith and
right.
All those streets down there on 2nd, basically to the east of, to the west, excuse me, of Target. That's, that was a much more major, I mean, we knew it was bad, but we had to go down like 3 feet in that one. So that took a lot longer and a lot more resources to take care of. As a matter of fact, while we were in there, since we went down so deep, we actually replaced some water lines while we're at it, just so we don't have to tear that stuff up again.
Gee, that would make sense, wouldn't it? Once you got the take care of everything.
Yeah, it wasn't a priority for the water, but we figured since we were so deep, it was probably the best time to do it.
So did that then take some other paving projects and push them into next year?
Likely not. We can go throughout the year typically for paving. Nice, but we can go in the wet season for painting.
Yeah, no, I was thinking more the funds available. That's all, not the weather.
No, it was all. It wasn't too much more. It's just more work. It wasn't a significant increase.
Oh, just the time and a couple of plastic pipes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As you look at infrastructure, you know, and you see what's going on with the city streets throughout town. What's it going to take to get a lot of that smooth back out again? I know you in the couple months ago you'd indicated that PG&E has to bring things back to level and blah blah, and you know, like I know, it never happens until you put one massive overlay. Is that in the cards for a lot of these streets that are just getting chewed up, or is it going to have to get to a situation like X Street where it's up and down and all over and jar-rattling experiences driving on it before the city will be able to do that?
No, that's the whole intent. Once we get up and run, we want to have a regular routine maintenance to where we don't have a complete road reconstruction. We're dealing with that. I mean, we had so much deferred maintenance. We have many roads that are like X Street, like West Hawthorne used to be, those type of streets that were so tore up that you're grinding replacing the whole road. And so, you know, I think it was 5 to 10 years to where we get to the point where it's just slurry seals and overlays as opposed to reconstruction, so that we can, you know, keep our streets maintained and have it on a more sustainable level and not have to do this boom and bust where, you're waiting for this road to get fixed. It's not really worth it, and you just patch it. I mean, that's what X Street was. We just patched it and patched it, then the rain comes out, and you know, it was just whack-a-mole at that point, as opposed to doing the appropriate thing, which is a complete reconstruction, which we didn't have the funding before. But now we have the funding to do that. And so those areas that need the complete reconstruction, we can have that complete reconstruction and then stay on top of it with routine maintenance.
You mean like the bottom of Booner Hill?
Bottom of Booner's in great shot. I mean, that's 25, they're going to feel fine.
There's a pothole down there at the bottom where the creek is that, you know, goes underneath it.
I believe that's from your sewer lateral, Brian. We may have to send somebody out there.
No, this is the bottom of the hill, dude, not mine. Not yet. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka City Manager Miles Slattery. Miles, with some of the different opportunities that are out there, housing is kind of, well, it's still there. It's not novel anymore, so it's not getting quite the same attention. What have been the number of permits taken out in the city this year versus last year? Are you seeing a definite uptick in housing starts, whether they're ADUs, mother-in-laws, or new construction?
Yeah, definitely ADUs we have. And then, of course, major projects like, you know, ACGC, Will Adams has his mixed-use project at the Cross and Los Olas. Excuse me, that's San Diego Los Bagels. That's pretty bad. And then he's also got another one that's pending that he's putting in for permitting on 3rd and G. And then, yeah, we have a lot of ADUs, especially since the new state legislation made them kind of over-the-counter permits, so they're a lot easier to do. What we're really seeing a lot of right now is a lot of VRBOs. I think the vacation rentals, the short-term rentals, I think the word's gotten out to folks who are not doing it and registering their properties, and so they're starting to register their properties. So I can't tell you. I've probably signed about 10 to 12 of them in the last month for turning their stuff into VRBOs.
Well, is it turning, or is it just formalizing what's already going on?
It's hard to tell because I don't work closely with the consultant. They have a handle on exactly who's been doing it for a long time and how long, and we're actually going to be sending out letters to those folks to let them know that they need to catch up with their TOT that they haven't been paying.
Yeah, into compliance.
Yeah, and so I can't really say which ones, you know, have been doing it for a while. Seems to me that some of them are newer, and they're doing that. So we're going to look at that, get an inventory of how many are out there, and then once we get this all going, we're going to take the TOT funds from those VRBOs and establish a housing trust fund so that we can use those funding for housing projects.
Oh, okay. I would imagine that the Lodging Association is either interested in it or knows how many there already are, or an estimate of how many there are. Is that?
They're definitely interested in it, and I'm sure that when we come back to council with an inventory and potential regulations that they'll have some input.
Or comma, want to have some input.
Yes.
Well, that's one thing also. I would think if there is on-street parking in these, the neighborhood would want to have some recognition of it or some kind of an offset, because if they can't park in front of their house because the guy next door is renting his place out, you know, you could see that there could be some emotional escalation going on in that situation.
Yeah, and depending on the situation, there are parking requirements, depending on, you know, zoning and other things like that. So typically, I don't see that being too much of a problem. I mean, of course, if it's a reunion of some sort and they have, you know, 10 people coming to one house and 5 vehicles, that could be a problem.
Yeah, life gets kind of exciting.
Those are the things that'll be discussed. So.
Now, Trinidad, did they outlaw or deregulate, or they did something because it was turning into, you know, party town kind of thing and really tearing up the city and the neighborhoods within the city? Is that a concern also for Eureka to look and make sure that this doesn't get out of hand?
I don't know if it's necessarily that. I think there is a concern about decreasing our housing stock by doing this. And so I think that would be more of our council's concern, more so than Eureka loves to party, so I don't see why that would be a problem. But I think it's more...
That's only at 5th and K on the second floor.
Exactly. But I think the concern is more the housing. That's why we came up with the idea of taking the TOT into a housing trust fund. And I don't know which way council's going to go. Are they going to cap it? Are they going to say, you know, only certain areas? Are they going to regulate it by geography? I don't know. We're going to provide a bunch of options, and they'll consider those options.
So what is a housing trust fund?
So basically, if you establish one, you can do it at any municipal or county level. And when you establish it, the state will actually match the funding. I think once you get up to $500,000, the state will match it. And as you go on from there, the state will continue to match it. So it could be used for a variety of things. It could be used for first-time homebuyer programs. It could be used for transitional housing. It could be used to purchase property so that it could be used for housing. It has a lot of options for you to use to support housing. And so if we're going to be getting money from these vacation rentals and there's a concern about the housing stock, this is a good way to take advantage of that and use it for potential housing projects.
Well, I would think with the first-time home buyers, you know, when it was established early on, what was it, $150,000 or something was the cap for a house value that would qualify? Yeah, I would think it probably would be time to goose that up.
Well, yeah, we still have the CDBG. We still have the Community Development Block Grant money that we get for that, and so we still do that. But yeah, we can supplement it. It's not 150 anymore. I don't even know if there is a cap, but there's, I think it's based on your income level and what you can afford.
Oh, okay.
But either way, it's something that we could either supplement or I think that our council currently sees it more as an opportunity to develop new housing.
Oh, not to supplement so that some of the rentals come off and turn into owner occupied. I would think that. Maybe I've been a little out to lunch, but I would think that owner-occupied would be the ultimate goal for housing in any community, because then you've got people that are vested rather than somebody from out of the area, you know, investing and really never seeing that property or caring nearly to the same extent as somebody who owns it and is living in it.
That's exactly their angle. That's 100% true, and I think that... the more that we can do that, you know, the more, I mean, recruitment and retention for, you know, employment, all of those things, I think that's what the concern is. I mean, we've all heard about the medical field and how hard it is to attract people here, and one of the components for that is the lack of housing.
Or just entry-level working folks. I mean, it doesn't have to be the high end.
100%. We want to do, I mean, even teachers in school, you know, so you want to be able to do the whole range of income levels, whether it's affordable, whether it's, you know, workforce, whether it's market rate, above market rate, you know, you need to concentrate on all those things.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Miles Slattery. Miles, signal light on F, kind of a joint project between the county and the city out at Grant School. It didn't look as if there was anything going on at that particular juncture yet. Is that on the books for this year, next year? Is the project been scuttled? What's the status there?
So that's solely the county. We helped with the neighborhood group and you know, I don't know about help, but we encouraged them to apply for Measure Z money. And that Measure Z money was approved, you know, once they had some leftover. And so that's all in the county. I know that the funding was earmarked, but that'd be a great question for Mr. Bone to answer, because I think that it's in the queue. I just don't know when it's going to happen.
So the city, because so much of F Street leading up to that is within the city, you guys are just kind of following the lead dog on this one?
Well, yeah, I mean, we were never really asked for funding or anything associated with that. We've done some improvements out, you know, in our portion of it.
Right.
But we didn't, you know, that was part of a Measure Z application and, you know, the community members in that neighborhood wanting to have a stoplight there.
Yeah. So it's all on, it's a project rather than anything that the city has.
Yeah, it's all in the county.
Yeah, okay. The governor came out with some of his green, I don't know, positioning, I guess, not initiatives, but green positioning. The car situation. When you look at the application of some of these philosophical statements that are done, do you shudder? I think the thing that's going around now with the cars is that PG&E and the governor are asking everybody not to charge their electric cars. Well, that's dandy, but if that's all you got, now they're telling you pretty much stay at home, don't turn on the air conditioner, and just kind of be a good citizen and roast. I mean, when you hear that kind of stuff, looking at the numbers that we have here, and granted, we may not have a huge number of the EVs here, but I think 42% of all electric vehicles in America are California registered. Can the city put that infrastructure in place within 10 years?
I think that's aggressive. I don't know if we'll be able to do that. I think that, you know, one of the things that would help a lot is some of the solar options that you could have, and then you don't really have to worry about, you know, the impact on the grid. I think that what we are doing as a city right now is we're really trying to incentivize solar and EV charging stations. Right now, some of our codes trigger other burdensome, cost prohibitive work that needs to be done. So, for example, if you get over $50,000 of improvement on your home, and that could be just a PV system for solar. If you do that, it triggers two things. One, it triggers our sewer lateral ordinance, and two, it triggers some planning and landscaping requirements in our zoning code. So what we're doing in the next couple of months is we're, you know, and to me that's disincentivizing putting in solar. So what we're doing is we're removing that from the sewer lateral ordinance where you know, if you want to do solar, it's just going to fall. It falls under electric permit as opposed to a building permit. And so that $50,000 trigger is only going to be based on building permit stuff, not electrical. And then we're going to exempt EV stations and solar as a part of the zoning requirements as well.
All right,
so I think that if that could happen, and now the building code's already there. It's not that we have much new construction, but the new building code requires solar.
Sprinkling also. Let's back that up just a sec. A $50,000 remodel on a house triggers all kinds of additional fees and requirements? Or is this new construction?
So on a residential, it doesn't do the zoning part of it, but on commercial, it does.
Okay.
Which, you know, we're going to change. On residential, it does trigger the sewer lateral. So that's the one thing. And there's been a lot of confusion over that. We're going to go back to council with some updates on that. And it's going to be a combination of a point of sale as well as that trigger.
So
we're going to modify that trigger a little bit.
So any home sales, in order for that to be sold, that house to be sold, you need to have a new sewer lateral put in?
It's it's really difficult because not that they have to get it in, it just needs to be inspected.
Oh.
And so if your inspection results in it being a clay pipe or having defects, then you'd have to replace it. But if it's in good condition and not a clay pipe, then you don't have to get it.
Which probably is, what, 75% of the city houses are still
I don't know if I'd go that high, but it's probably a majority.
Holy Toledo. That's a new industry.
But, I mean, that's the thing that was super odd is when we brought this up, you know, it was first and brought up as a point of sale, and then we had certain community members just outcry over, and it's the first time that a bill ever got vetoed by our mayor. And then we went back and reworked it and did it based on, you know, improvements triggering it. And now some of those same people who wanted it to not be a point of sale is telling us that they want it to be a point of sale. So it's been a back and forth.
Well, you know, you're doing,
and I know it's,
you're doing your best to get me to show up to a city council meeting. All right,
I'm not even going to tell you. Not even going to tell you when we're introducing that one.
Good. I'll save a little consternation from everybody. Oh, have a great Labor Day weekend, and see you next month.
All right, you guys have a good one. Thank you.
Thanks, Miles.